Thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is Holistic Retirement Planning in a Rising Cost World. We are so happy to welcome David Winston to the SPIRIT Forum. David is the Executive Wealth Advisor of Winston Health Wealth Advisors. For more than 28 years, David and his team have helped hundreds of families throughout the United States prepare and enjoy their retirement years. Based in Dallas, Texas, David was the founding president of Torah Day School of Dallas in 2003. Serving in that role for more than 10 years, the school now has an enrollment of more than 400 children. We are so appreciative to Winston Wealth Advisors to becoming a SPIRIT corporate sponsor, and you'll be able to find that link on our website for further information. It is my privilege and pleasure to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to David Winston. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you so much, Robinson Steinig, for the beautiful introduction. And thank you for joining this webinar. I hope you will find our time together to help you become more insightful with your financial journey and how you could be better prepared for, among other things, the rising cost world in which we live today. Recently, I came across something from Rabbi David Ashir that really resonated with me, and I hope we can tap into this idea during our financial journey. Rabbi Ashir in Living Emuna 5 points out that we come across people in our lives that seemingly accomplish more than is humanly possible. It's amazing how they juggle many responsibilities all at once, which they've done that for years, and they still find a way to excel at each one. We all know people like that. As an example, Rabbi Ashir points to the life of Rabbi Meir Shapiro. Rabbi Shapiro introduced the idea of Daf Yomi, learning a page of Gemara each day and completing the entire cycle every 7.5 years. Although Rabbi David Shapiro only lived 46 years, he accomplished what normally would have taken two lifetimes. He founded and led the great yeshiva of Lublin. He became the chief rabbi of Lodz, authored Sfarim, and eventually became the president of Agudat Israel in Poland, and even had time to serve in the Polish parliament. The question Rabbi Ashir asks is, how is it possible for one person in such a short period of time make such an impact on the world? Rabbi Shapiro himself taught us the answer. He quoted a pasuk in Lech Lecha in which Hashem told Avraham, and I use the Stone Humish as a translation, gaze now toward the heavens and count the stars if you're able to count them. And Hashem further said to him, so shall your offspring be. Rabbi Shapiro explained that of course Avraham followed the command of God and went outside and started counting the stars. But in the same sentence, Hashem told Avraham, it is impossible to count the stars. The question we ask is, why then did Hashem tell Avraham to count them at all if it's impossible? Well, Hashem was teaching Avraham a most valuable lesson. Even though, according to nature, it would be impossible to count all the stars, Hashem still said, I want you to begin. You do your part, and I will help you with the rest. Hashem also communicated that this would apply to your children. This divine assistance is not just for you. Your children should know this lesson as well. This, my friend, applies to how we, in my view, should approach and plan for our financial lives. It is only in our benefit to begin to count, ponder our goals, set direction, and realize the actual outcome in the end is in Hashem's hands. Let me pull up our presentation here. There we go. Today, we're going to talk about holistic retirement planning in a rising cost world. I will introduce you to the origins of financial planning, what prompted its beginnings, and how families around the world now rely on skilled planners to make sense of where they are financially today, likely where they're headed, and God willing, the legacy they will leave to the next generation. Then I'll introduce you to Jerry and Joan. Not a real couple, but I'm confident you'll identify them in many ways. They are the almost empty nesters. They paid for what seemed like never-ending day school tuition for each of their children. They scrambled to pay for a few weddings, and God willing, still have a few more to marry off. Like many of you, they've done a nice job of accumulating assets and preparing for their upcoming retirement. They have definite ideas of when they want to retire and what kind of lifestyle they want to have for their retirement years. At first glance, it appears that they are financially ready for retirement. We will, however, examine some possible adjustments that, when implemented, may increase their success. We will also look at the components of what makes a holistic retirement plan. And at the end of my presentation, before we open it up to questions, I will show you how you can receive a planning worksheet and an income and expense tool in your email inbox. So, when did the field of financial planning begin to develop? We've often heard that the necessity is the mother of invention. So too with financial planning. In the late 60s, a small group of professionals realized that families needed more resources beyond what just Social Security could provide. Their initial goal was to provide financial literacy and help families make more informed decisions with their finances. Much of the work at that time was on handwritten ledgers. With the help of Microsoft Excel in the 80s, they could make calculations a little bit easier, and they could factor in multiple outcomes such as inflation, premature death, and an assumed portfolio rate of return. Fortunately, today we have very sophisticated planning software that, with the skill of a seasoned advisor, provides a client a deep understanding of where they are today, what-if scenarios, portfolio analysis, plan monitoring, and quantifying the incremental progress required to reach short and long-term goals. Another major change in the financial planning was life expectancies. As life expectancies increased over the years, there was an ever-growing need to accumulate a nest egg to supplement the limitations of Social Security and fixed pensions. AARP estimates that 1 in 5 married couples receive 90% of their income from Social Security. The problem is, if one of them dies, then the survivor only receives the higher of the 2 Social Security checks for the remainder of his or her life. This makes a bad financial situation even worse. So, what has changed over the last few generations? My grandparents, who were born around the turn of the century, had a life expectancy at birth less than 50 years of age. However, modern medicine extended their mortality rate significantly. The fact is that our grandparents generally worked until they died. They did not require an income stream to last for a very long period of time beyond their working years. In 1935, President Roosevelt enacted Social Security, and it required employers and employees to contribute to the system with a commencement age of 65. Well, actuarially at the time, the system worked quite well. as many died before collecting anything at all. It was simply a government form of an insurance policy for Americans living too long. I was born in 1959. Life expectancy for me at birth was about 70. Our children born in the 90s have a life expectancy of 75 or more, and my grandkids today have a life expectancy greater than 80. The fact is, our sample clients, Jerry and Joan, who are in their 60s, may easily be retired for more years than they worked. So it is only logical that it takes a lot of money to fuel decades of retirement, especially in a rising cost world. As planners, we seek to quantify the amount of money and cash flow it will take to fuel a 30-year retirement. So let's begin our program with a quote from a person that looked at life a little differently than most of us, Yogi Berra. If you don't know where you're going, you'll probably end up somewhere else. Maybe Yogi was a financial planning fan, who knows? So what are the components of a holistic plan? And what are the questions that we're trying to ask? Am I on track to meet my financial objectives? And am I prepared for the unanticipated events of life? What will it take to maintain my lifestyle at multiple points of retirement, given various assumptions? What rate of return and rate of inflation am I assuming? Is my portfolio properly diversified? A quality plan helps families become more organized because knowing what the sources of income they have and where the money is going to support their lifestyle, that's an important factor to know. There should also be a nice level of accountability. Are we living within our means? Is something off kilter? Are we helping our kids possibly more than we should at the expense of our own retirement? And we like for a plan to be fully objective and not overly influenced by emotions. Being proactive and insightful helps avoid the shock of life's what ifs. How does the owner of the plan define risk? Is it the risk of higher inflation and loss of purchasing power, the fluctuation in rates of return, dying early, or living beyond one's resources? In the 29 years I've been in business, I've never had a client tell me that they had too much money. Comfortable and blessed for sure, too much, never. So what is holistic planning? What's it all about? It takes into consideration each of the disciplines. The segments of the pie are really like puzzle pieces. As you'll soon discover, every facet is somewhat interconnected. You can't make one choice without impacting something else. It really comes down to wants, needs, and resources. The goal is to allocate resources to ensure the best possible outcome. Some real-world examples are, can I afford a second home in Israel? Where should I draw $50,000 to pay for the wedding that I have this spring? Do I borrow from my 401k? Do I use my cash reserves? Or do I put it on a credit card? I like the points, doesn't make sense. The other questions that we ask is, do we have adequate life insurance? If a spouse died now or in 10 years, what happens to the survivor's standard of living? Are investments properly diversified to meet the plan's goals? Every plan quantifies a required rate of return that a client needs to earn over time based on their unique situation with the goal of not running out of money. Parenthetically, have you ever seen or taken one of those risk tolerance questionnaires? It usually has questions such as, if the market dips by 10% over a three-month period, would you adjust your portfolio? Would you move it to cash? Would you buy bonds? What would you do? Well, sadly, these questionnaires often steer a consumer to a portfolio that is too conservative and does not match up with the required rate of return dictated by the plan. If the plan requires a 7% plus rate of return and the portfolio in the realm of possibilities will only make 4%, Well, we have problems. This is only magnified in a rising interest rate environment. For our next webinar later this year, I'm planning a presentation that goes through the portfolio construction process and how essential this one component can be to plan outcomes. You will learn how portfolio must be designed to serve the plan, not a risk tolerance questionnaire. All right, back to the plan, back to the program. Is the plan tax efficient? Are my investments and where I'm planning to take income in retirement designed to minimize taxes? And estate planning is merely passing assets to the next generation as efficiently as possible to minimize estate taxes and the cost of probate. So what are the variables we're trying to attempt to solve when we're working with a holistic plan? Well, inflation has become a tremendous challenge for our daily cost of living and the assumptions we must make in a 30-year retirement. The rule of 72 is a simple calculation to determine how many years it takes to double your money. So if we assume a 7% rate of return, we take 72 divided by 7 equals 10. So it takes 10 years to double your money. It's a really fun calculation. But what about using it for the impacts of inflation? Well, this rule can help us calculate the loss of purchasing power. So imagine an inflation rate of 5%. The purchasing power of a dollar only buys 50 cents of goods and services every 14.4 years. 72 divided by 5 equals 14.4 years. Well, here's an example. How many dollars do we need today to purchase what a dollar bought us in 1990? The figure is $2.24. The cumulative rate of inflation was 123.9% since 1990. Well, we see this today in our cost of food, transportation, property taxes, everything. Life expectancy, another huge factor. Long-term care, if it's an event for one or both spouses? And do we have a good handle on how much money we really need to maintain a healthy standard of living in retirement? We always want to illustrate expenses that are higher than estimated to have a healthy margin of error. We always come across air conditioning issues, plumbing things out of the unexpected, but that's why we build in a margin of error. All right, so now that I'm retired, what buckets of money do I draw from in retirement? Do I draw from a traditional IRA first, last, or a combination of an IRA, a Roth IRA, or non-qualified assets? All this can be simulated for best possible outcome while in retirement. And what would reasonably be expected to leave for the next generation? Well, let's delve into longevity risk a little bit. What we see here is a couple, both in their 60s, the odds of wanting them, one of them to reach age 90. It's gonna happen. Now, let's formally introduce you to Jerry and Joan. Jerry is 62, he has a consulting business. Joan is an educator. She participates in the New Jersey pension plan. Jerry is currently maxing out his 401k. Which this year, by the way, is $30,000. Daughter Chaya is engaged. There's a March wedding, but the newlyweds will need some financial assistance for 2 years while they finish up their education. And Yonatan, their son, is a student. His tuition is $20,000 a year, adjusted for inflation, until 2025. And he's studying to be a CPA, and he's been doing internships. So the odds of Yonatan getting a job right after college is very high. And we're gonna set aside $50,000 for Yonatan and a wedding down the road. Now the retirement goals for Jerry, he wants to retire at age 66, Joan age 65. They love to travel, they don't have very expensive hobbies, and they replace a car once every 8 years. And they give their tzedakah. The greatest concern is outliving their resources and the rising cost of living. And they're not anticipating any additional inheritances. In 20 years, Jerry will be 82 and Joan 80. There's an 82% probability one of them will be alive in 20 years. In 25 years, there's a 63% probability one of them will be alive. In 30 years, there's still a 36% probability one of them will be alive. So we have to plan for longevity inside of the plan. So what are some of the considerations? You know, first question is the retirement date attainable? Is the portfolio designed for a rising cost world? Are we assuming a proper rate of inflation? Is the life insurance that they currently have adequate? Are their living expenses realistic? We like to test that with our clients to make sure that it's real. And is there a margin of error in our assumptions? And the content of this material that we're presenting today is for informational purposes only and not intended to provide any specific advice or recommendations. Now let's go into the plan for Jerry and Joan. All right, so inside of the plan, we're gonna go through a few areas first. The first thing that we try to quantify is, all right, what are the assets and what buckets are they in? Are they taxable investments, IRA type of accounts? How much real estate do they have, et cetera? So Jerry and Joan have a little cash reserve, 75,000 of cash reserves. There's 750,000 in a joint investment account. Jerry inherited an IRA. He has his 401k. They have their home in New Jersey. There's a little cash value in their life insurance. Their total assets are $3 million. They still have a mortgage on their home, but it's at a very low interest rate. So there's no incentive to pay it off anytime real soon. And if we look at their cash flow, it takes into consideration, this shows the 5-year cash flow figures. You know, we have Jerry's income for the next 3 years, Joan's salary, and then there's going to be a pension that Joan will have when she retires from teaching. And then this shows some withdrawals that they're going to need to make during some next few years to cover some expenses. For example, we have the wedding for Chaya. We have the assistance to the newlyweds for the next 3 years. All these numbers are taken into consideration, as well as the charity that they're doing before retirement and after retirement. So we look at each of the cash flows over many, many different years and building the plan. And then it shows an amortization table to show, you know, when they're going to be able to, you know, have their home paid off. Well, it's a 3.5% mortgage and they're paying about $1,500 a month. The majority of it's going towards principal. There's a little bit of interest in there as well. And I mentioned the savings. Jerry is contributing to his 401k and he has a company match as well. And then Social Security, as a participant in the Jersey pension plan for teachers, Joan is not going to be eligible for Jerry's Social Security to any great extent at all. And she doesn't have for her own because she didn't contribute to the system. But we project in 2027, Jerry would receive $34,000 a year from Social Security. Then it all lends into this withdrawal. So we want to anticipate A, how much money a client has, and B, is the withdrawal percentage that they're taking sustainable? So you can see by the time that Jerry retires in 2026, is about $2.2 million of portfolio assets, not including their home. Then the withdrawals that they're going to need to supplement Social Security and pensions is this figure here. Well, when you look to the far right, the numbers, the percentages that we're taking out, we're only assuming a 7% rate of return and I think about 3.5% inflation over time. So what happens is the withdrawals based on their standard of living become exceptionally high and they run out of money at age 90. So that's not, it appears that, oh, I've got $2 million, I can retire quite comfortably, but not necessarily. So then we run a Monte Carlo summary or an analysis that runs 1,000 different trials or simulations of good periods of history, bad periods, et cetera. And the probability of success for them based on their standard of living is not very high. So we want to look at what can we do to improve upon that. And then we also look at life insurance. So currently, the computer's thinking, here we go. So Jerry has a $250,000 whole life policy and a $750,000 term policy. He has $1 million of insurance. And Chaya has a $50,000 whole life policy that her parents took out when she was a young girl. So the system will help us determine, is there a gap and do we need a little bit more term insurance for a very short period of time? And the system says, yes, they need about, Jerry needs about another $450,000 of life insurance. And then we can go through cash flows based on premature death, et cetera. But in the plan recommendations, and that we'll explore is, you say, well, if we had a little bit more life insurance on Jerry and Joan, that's great. And then what if Jerry retired at 69 instead of 66? How well does that increase the probability of success within the plan? And also the portfolio. A little, right now, they're a little bit too conservative in their assumptions. So with a more diversified portfolio, it may help them achieve a greater outcome. And then based on those recommendations, we can see what the withdrawals look like side by side. So the base facts are here. The clients run out of money in 2052. On the right side, with the adjustment and working 3 more years, the withdrawals are more into the 4% range, which we like, and the money basically lasts as long as they do. And there's theoretically a $3 million to pass to the next generation as well. So sometimes it's just making a few minor adjustments makes a difference in an overall plan. And again, as a disclosure, this is just a sample situation. It's not designed for any specific advice at all. All right, so now I want to go into one last area before questions, and this helps us visually see the what ifs. So what we can do is just toggle each of these different ideas. All right, so how much would it help if we kept the portfolio where it was and Jerry worked 3 more years? Well, it pushes things out a little bit, but not as much as a rebalanced portfolio. The rebalanced portfolio will show it doesn't extinguish its value at all. But if he said, okay, what if I adjusted the portfolio, but I didn't work 3 more years? Well, then it's possible. But working a little bit longer generally buys time to improve the situation. And then we could do the what ifs as far as premature death, et cetera, for each of them as well. So that's our presentation today. I hope you found it informative. And Revitz and Steinegg, I'm happy to open it up to some questions. Oh, before we do, I need to show you how you can access the financial planning worksheet. So if you just go to the OU Spirit website and then click on our logo, you'll come to a landing page and you can learn a little bit more about our firm and what we do. And then at the bottom, you could just enter your name, email address, phone, and any questions you have, and we'll be happy to address that for you. And then we'll send you a financial planning worksheet and an income and expense tool that I think you'll enjoy as well. Okay. And with that, we'll open it up to questions.
Okay, are you going to stop the share screen?
I will stop the share screen.
Okay. Thank you so much, David. I think you gave us a lot of information, a lot to think about. If there's any questions, please put them in the chat. One question did come to me already, which is what I'm sure people are wondering, and I'm obviously it depends on, you know, where you, and who you're talking to, but the type of information that you were providing for that couple, what are the costs for these types of, you know, for that information?
Gotcha. So yeah, what we would encourage is just fill out the worksheet, send it to us. We try to make it a beautiful win-win situation. And if we manage enough assets, the cost of the financial plan that we do is none at all. So it's a function of the amount of assets that we're managing, but we try to structure it to be helpful to everybody.
Got it. Do you have any questions in the chat for you? Because I don't see anything else here.
I do not.
Oh, I guess everybody knows exactly how to retire. Amazing. Oh, wait, no, here's one. Okay. Somebody wants to know what happens if you need, wait one second. What happens if you need to, I just lost it. Sorry. What happens if you need to withdraw from your retirement? What do you draw from first, IRA or stocks? This person says, I know IRA counts towards income and that can really increase Medicare payments. So what's the, you know, thought there?
Right. Each plan is unique and it just depends on a whole number of variables. So it's not a one size fits all. But the whole goal is you want to put money into your retirement plans as quickly as possible, save all your taxes, and then you want to take it out as slowly as possible. So in the plan that we just did for Jerry and Joan, it actually showed 80% of the income should come from retirement accounts, 20% from non-retirement. So each plan will have its own unique percentages that we calculate.
Okay. One second. Wait. Somebody's saying they're strongly against reverse mortgages. What is your opinion on that?
It's a last resort.
Okay. Do you want to just explain what it is for everybody?
Basically, a reverse mortgage generally comes into play when somebody has exhausted all their resources, all their investments, and they're just living on Social Security and a small pension. And they have a lot of equity within their house. So rather than moving and liquidating the value of their house, they borrow against their house. But it's not a good situation. It's a very expensive way to draw on the equity from your home. So it's a last resort.
Okay. At what age does developing trusts make sense?
Again, it's an individual unique situation. If you have family members that you're protecting, like a special needs trust, you know, then it would be at a very young age that you're going to need these trusts. So it's a unique situation. Everybody's different, but you know, in certain states where probate cost is very high, trusts are very favorable. In Texas, where probate is very inexpensive, trusts aren't as popular. So it just depends on where somebody lives.
Okay, somebody's indicating that they're employed, but they're saving their HSA, and I want you to explain what that is, account for retirement. Is that sensible? Sure. You know, holding on to the HSA.
Sure, absolutely. No, it's a tax-efficient vehicle. It's a health savings account where you basically put money into it like a 401k, pre-tax money to be used for down the road health expenses. So yeah, we like a health savings account, especially if you're maxing out your 401k as well. So it's a good tool.
Which you cannot get later on when you're
when you retire, you can use your HSA account. Yeah.
But you can't add to it then. You know,
no, you can't add to it. Right.
Right. Okay. Somebody wants to know, they're asking about you. Are you a regular broker salesperson or person required to do what's best for the client?
Right. So that's a fiduciary. Yes. We are fiduciaries. Yes.
Do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, a fiduciary, again, whether you're a commission broker or a fiduciary, you should always be acting in the best interest of your client. But a lot of the advertising online says, ask your broker if they're a fiduciary. And as a registered investment advisor, we are fiduciaries. Yes.
Okay. Do you agree that self-insuring is better than spending lots of money up front that will be lost if not necessary? And if you could explain also what that means for everybody with self-insuring.
Well, I'm not sure if they mean self-insuring their life insurance or self-insuring health insurance, self-insuring car insurance, home insurance.
Do health insurance and life insurance. Okay. Since I'm not sure unless they.
Yeah.
The person meant long-term care.
Oh, long-term care. Great question. Long-term care is one of those that if we have enough assets, we don't need the long-term care insurance. So it's a unique situation. There are some policies out there that if you put money into them and you don't use it, you know, there's a life insurance aspect to it. So in the old days, it was you paid like car insurance on a long-term care policy. And if you never used it, you know, you lost your money. Not so anymore. So again, it's one of those individual choices. But if there's enough assets where you don't need the long-term care, by all means, we self-insure.
Okay. Should retirees with the income level that you described be paying $75,000 for a wedding and support? Is this a responsible use of funds? Okay, good point.
Great point. I again, that's an individual choice. And again, that's one of the choices that we bring up with clients. You say, well, maybe that's a little extravagant, you know, but the problem is once the precedent is set with one of their children, then what are you gonna do for the next child? So it's definitely a discussion.
Okay. What factors would enter into whether one can afford to buy a second home in Israel?
Right. So it comes down to if they have enough resources, it's no different than an expensive hobby, you know, playing golf. If they can afford that in their retirement and they can afford, you know, the insurance, the upkeep and whatnot, by all means, you know, if it can make it work. And we have several clients that have done that.
Okay. What vehicle do you recommend for grandchildren? A 529, Roth IRA, trust funds, or other? And you want to, if you could explain what the 529 is.
Yeah, 529 is a college plan, college savings plan. The advantage of a college savings plan is the younger the child is, the more benefit that you have because the money goes in and it becomes tax-free when the money, it grows tax deferred and then it becomes tax-free if used for upper education expenses or even high school now. So it's a great vehicle And again, it's a choice. Do we have enough assets to put into the plan to handle it with a 529? The cash flow, yeah, it's a great benefit. Also, in each state, there's some tax benefits to doing that as well. So, and a Roth IRA is if the young person is working, you know, they can have a Roth IRA. But I guess the question is, would a parent draw from their Roth IRA to pay for a college education? Yes, that could happen, but the 529 is more beneficial if you start years in advance. So it just depends.
Okay. By the way, are you getting any questions in your chat? So you should be checking that too. Anything?
Oh, I didn't even know where to look. I'm sorry. Now I see them. Okay. All right. A couple in their 60s and 70s, still working, not too much in the 401ks. How do they catch up on investments to secure the retirement? Again, that's just going to be, have to look at the entire picture, see what the cost of living is. And it may be that there's enough pension and Social Security income to fuel them. But catching up, if you can, through 401k type money or IRA accounts, Roth IRAs, anything to sock money away for the future is to be beneficial.
Okay, as a guideline, what would be enough assets? I don't know that you can answer this for a long-term care. They want either a dollar amount or percentage to self-insure.
Again, it's a,
that's too hard to answer.
It's you have to look at the whole picture. Yeah. But the rule of thumb is if there's enough income from Social Security, pensions, and investments to support somebody at $6,000 to $10,000 a month, then you can self-insure because that's the cost of care.
And somebody else is asking how to view saving for long-term care versus Medicaid. Okay, accumulating money. Okay, it's I guess for self-insurance versus Medicaid planning, which is liquidating because you'll never know if you'll need the long-term care at all. So that's
right. Right. Yeah, and then that's a whole thing with attorneys.
Which we actually covered. If everybody wants to go back to, it's already in the archives. Elizabeth Forspan did discuss this at the beginning of December, and it's already been archived.
So yeah, that was a great presentation that she did, yeah.
So, and she'll be coming back to present again. So that might give some more clarity. That's all I have right now. Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's it.
What? Nope, here's another one. What is a general rule for how much life insurance to take out? Should it be just enough to pay off outstanding liabilities? How much should be left over for survivors?
Right. Well, then again, it just comes down to what lifestyle you want the surviving spouse to have. Certainly paying off debt is a big factor, but then you go, all right, if that's all I have, are there enough income between Social Security, pension, and investments that I don't need? So the calculations that we run take that into consideration. So, yeah, so it usually takes a little bit more than just paying off the debt, but it depends. You know, every situation is unique. There's no two plans identical.
Okay, just one second. There was one more thing here I thought I saw.
But if we don't need life insurance, all the better.
I thought I saw something else. Oh, somebody asked a question regarding the 529. How do colleges take that into account? How does that affect scholarships?
Right, right.
Does it?
It does. So there are some tricks to that as far as when you answer that, yes, my son or daughter has a 529 account, You place that on the financial aid FAFSA form. But if all the 529 accounts are, let's say, in the youngest child's name, and that's where we're accumulating it, there are some workarounds. In addition, certain universities, anybody that has a 529 and goes to a traditional, you know, college is going to have no problem withdrawing money out of the 529. Even many yeshivas like Lakewood, et cetera, you know, they're accredited, they're under the FAFSA form, that's fine. Where we get into trouble is when somebody goes to Israel and they're not part of the US system of colleges and universities, sometimes we have problems taking that money out tax-free. So there are some variables that have to be considered.
Okay. This question, I don't really understand what it means. So the person wants to know, does a 529 disqualify a child from a scholarship?
No. It's factored in.
But it could limit what they would get.
That could be.
I don't see anything else here. You want to just check and make sure that you don't have anything else?
I don't see any. No, that's it.
Okay, thank you so much. I have a few announcements. I think we got a lot of information. Everybody will be getting the recording later on, so you can go through this again. There was a request, David, can the slides that you showed, could we send those out, or is that, you know, is that something that you
sure
can send me? So we will send, if you can send me that, there were requests, we will send that out with the recording. So just hang tight. Everybody should know, if anyone's new to Spirit, you don't have to ask me for the recording. We get it automatically, whether you are on live, whether you're not on live. We, Baruch Hashem, we have people all over the United States and all over the world that register for our programs. And 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning is not always convenient for everybody. So all you have to do is register and you will automatically get the recording. And of course, and in a few weeks, it will be in the archives. That just doesn't happen right away. So, but just, you know, your registration is an automatic that the recording will come to you as soon as it's ready. Sometimes it does take a few hours and occasionally it doesn't happen until the next day. But we really try to be on top of it to make sure that you get that. And then it will also have the registration information for the next program, which is a week from today, Be'ezras Hashem. Sharsharet will be one of the leaders of Sharsharet will be talking about creating a caring community. That is when we have somebody, unfortunately, with illness, how can we appropriately support them? And if somebody's a caregiver, to support oneself. So that will be next Tuesday. The following Tuesday, okay, thinking a couple weeks in advance, we'll be doing another hybrid program with Rosh Chodesh Adar. And that will be, if anybody is in the Teaneck area at Congregation Beth Aaron, we'll be having Ellie Leibowitz, who is a comedian. So it'll be Zoomed out for everybody across the world. Don't worry about that. But if anybody is in the Teaneck area and can come and be with us right in the room at Congregation Beth Aaron, we'd love to have you. So again, more information will be coming. And my last item, hopefully everybody has been receiving our Spirit Survey. It was sent out for the third time this morning at 8 a.m. We thank those of you who have already participated. Baruch Hashem, we've had a great reception, wonderful comments, really, really helpful. But if you have not completed it yet, we really appreciate it. The average SurveyMonkey tells us, I think on average, it takes 6 minutes to fill it out. So if you can give us 6 minutes, we really appreciate all the information. So I think that is it for now. Thank you so much, David. Thank you again. We really appreciate all of your information. Lots of compliments coming in. Right. And we will see everybody again next week. Be healthy, be happy, and we'll see you again. Take care.
Bye-bye.